Eighth grade history, United States history, April 6th through April 9th. Wednesday, April 8th. History unit, Jacksonian democracy. Lesson 3, Andrew Jackson's inauguration. Unit overview, unity and sectionalism in the United States after the War of 1812. Objective, be able to do this by the end of this lesson. Through multiple sources, explain how Jackson's presidency brings a more democratic age to the United States. Introduction to Lesson 3. Two different ways to observe the democratization of the United States during Jackson's presidency is shown through Robert Cruikshank's painting, All Creation Going into the White House, and through a primary source when Margaret Smith goes to the White House to see the people's president. Her diary account reveals a byproduct of Jackson's Democratic Party. When viewing these two sources of information, have the following question in mind. How does Jackson's presidency reflect a democratizing of the United States? Plan of attack. Picture analysis. Robert Cruikshank's All Creation Going into the White House and Ramon Elorriaga's Washington's Inauguration. B. Primary source, Margaret Smith's account of President Andrew Jackson's inauguration. Number 1. What is the tone or mood of this painting? On page 11. What adjectives describe this painting? Page 12. Robert Cruikshank's All Creation Goes to the White House, or The President's Levee. What is happening in the painting? How do you know? What is the tone or mood of this painting? What adjectives describe this painting? Number 3. Definitions of levee. Number 1. A raised hill or embankment that prevents the overflow of water. Number 2. A formal reception of visitors and guests. B. Why do both meanings of the word levee seem appropriate for this painting? Page 13. In looking at both paintings, describe some meaningful differences between the two images and their portrayal of two inaugural addresses. Why are these differences significant? Hints: mood of the image, setting of the image, focus of the image, events occurring in the image. C. Margaret Smith's account of President Andrew Jackson's inauguration. Directions. Read and annotate the following primary source account. Jackson was America's first quote-unquote frontier president, the first president who did not come from the nation's East Coast elite. His victory was seen as a triumph for the common man and for democracy. The celebration of his inauguration was an opportunity for America's ordinary citizen to rejoice. She describes Jackson's inauguration in a letter to a friend. This is from Margaret Smith's account, March 11th, Sunday, 1829. A. Thursday morning, thousands and thousands of people, without distinction of rank, collected in an immense mass around the Capitol, silent, orderly, and tranquil, with their eyes fixed on the front of that edifice, waiting the appearance of the President in the portico. The door from the rotunda opens, preceded by the marshals, surrounded by the judges of the Supreme Court, the old man with his gray locks, that crown of glory, advances, bows to the people, who greet him with a shout that rends the air. The cannons, from the heights around, from Alexandria and Fort Warburton, proclaim the oath he has taken, and the hills reverberate the sound. It was grand. It was sublime. An almost breathless silence succeeded, and the multitude was still. Listening to catch the sound of his voice, though it was so low as to be heard only by those nearest to him. Page 14. After reading his speech, the oath was administered to him by the Chief Justice. The Marshal presented the Bible. The President took it from his hands, pressed his lips to it, laid it reverently down, then bowed again to the people. Yes, to the people in all their majesty. The south side of the Capitol was literally alive with the multitude, who stood ready to receive the hero and the multitude who attended him. When the speech was over, and the President made his parting bow, the barrier that had separated the people from him was broken down, and they rushed up the steps, all eager to shake hands with him. It was with difficulty that he made his way through the Capitol and down the hill to the gateway that opens on the avenue. Here for a moment he was stopped. The living mass was impenetrable. After a while a passage was open, and he mounted his horse, which had been provided for his return, for he had walked to the Capitol. Then such a cortege, or solemn procession, as followed him. Countrymen, farmers, gentlemen, mounted and dismounted, boys, women and children, black and white, carriages, wagons, and carts, all pursuing him to the President's house. We set off to the President's house, but on a nearer approach found an entrance impossible. The yard and avenue was compact with living matter. The immense crowd prevents Smith and her friends from entering the White House, so they walked to Smith's nearby home to rest. We rejoin her story 3 hours later as the group returns to the White House. B. But what a scene did we witness! The majesty of the people had disappeared, and a rabble, a mob of boys, Negroes, women, children, scrambling, fighting, romping. What a pity! What a pity! No arrangements had been made, no police officers placed on duty, and the whole house had been inundated by the rabble mob. We came too late. The President, after having been literally nearly pressed to death, and almost suffocated and torn to pieces by the people in their eagerness to shake hands with Old Hickory, had retreated through the back way or south front, and had escaped to his lodgings at Gatsby's. Cut glass and china, to the amount of several $1,000, had been broken in the struggle to get to the refreshments. Punch and other articles had been carried out in tubs and buckets. But had it been in hogsheads, it would have been insufficient. Ice creams and cake and lemonade for 20,000 people. For it is said that number were there, though I think the number exaggerated. Ladies fainted. Men were seen with bloody noses, and such a scene of confusion took place as is impossible to describe. Those who got in could not get out by the door again, but had to scramble out of windows. At one time, the President, who had retreated and retreated until he was pressed against the wall, could only be secured by a number of gentlemen forming around him and making a kind of barrier of their own bodies. And the pressure was so great that Colonel Bomford, who was one, said that at one time he was afraid they should have been pushed down, or on the President. It was then the windows were thrown open, and the torrent found an outlet, which otherwise might have proved fatal. This concourse had not been anticipated, and therefore not provided against. Ladies and gentlemen, only had been expected at this levee or gathering with the President, not the people en masse or the common folk. But it was the people's day, and the people's President, and the people would rule. Directions. Answer the following questions using textual evidence from primary source Margaret Smith's account of President Andrew Jackson's inauguration. Number one. In Section A, according to Margaret Smith, what kinds of people attended the inauguration? What was the mood of the audience during Jackson's inauguration? Number two. In Section A, what happened to President Jackson after he gave his parting bow? Why did he need to mount a horse to leave? number 3. In section B, describe what happened to President Jackson and the president's mansion. Number 4. In section B, why did Andrew Jackson have to leave the White House? Number 5. In section B, Margaret Smith ends her diary entry writing, "But it was the president's day, it was the people's day, and the people's president, and the people would rule." Why is this an appropriate ending to Jackson's inauguration and to his presidency? Check answers on page 20 and 21 and use a red pen for corrections. This concludes the material for Wednesday, April 8th.